Truth. Glenn Beck.
Yeah, I have something to confess today that I think is going to last through the eternities. Thank God for the sacrifice made for all of us, that there is forgiveness, because this one is a big one. For most of my life, really up until the last few years, abortion has been something that I refused to talk about. I'd always shied away from it. In fact, I know it was a third rail. We never would discuss it on radio. I thought it was a discussion that, to my shame, I would tell you, there was no way to win, and it would not be a positive for my career. And in fact, I would say things like, I'm carrying enough water on other issues. I can't take that one on, too. I was wrong. There was a time in my life that I was confused on abortion. My position on abortion was wrong. I was, you know, hey, everybody has to have the right to do what. And it came from a place of me not even thinking of it. I didn't want to think about it. I wanted to leave all the options on the table just in case, and who am I to judge, and all of this bull crap. But it all really boiled down to I didn't think about it. And I didn't want to. Abortion is wrong. It is evil. It is killing our children. Let's not kill children. Seems like a really easy thing to do, but it's not. Today is the 45th anniversary of the March for Life on Washington, D.C. And I want to take a moment here just to thank and applaud all of the men, women, and children who brave the bitter cold every single January to stand up for the lives of the unborn. You are the modern-day abolitionists. You are heroes. You are the people that will be remembered as pioneers. You will be remembered in the history books. Thank you for consistently reminding people like me that abortion is a practice that is wildly out of character for our country. We are a people who helped convict the Nazis of crimes against humanity at the Nuremberg trials. We passed the civil rights law. We have a deeply religious and moral foundation. How is it we have allowed the murder of over 60 million babies since 1974? Hopefully, one day soon, we're all going to be able to look back at our own barbarism and shudder in disbelief. I fear the shame that will come with it. Today, I want to begin the show to ask you to pray that we are just one march closer to that realization.
It's Friday, January 19th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mm. 60,069,971 abortions since Roe versus Wade. That number is higher since it was printed on this sheet. There are more African-American babies that are killed through abortion in New York City than are born. How does that escape us? How does that escape African Americans? They are killing more of your children than are born. We are a society that better figure out this life thing pretty quickly. I just read today in Science News, there is new AI that doctors say is profoundly accurate on estimating the remaining time of life for individuals when they check into the hospital. That it is accurately predicting how much time they have left. Let me say that again. It's accurately predicting how much time you have left when you enter a hospital. So what kind of questions sprout from that? They only have 6 more months to live, and AI is telling us it's a 6 more months. They shouldn't get any more treatment. Let's not treat them because 6 months. Is it always right? Is it always right? Or do we err on the side of death and money, or err on the side of life? We are a group of people that have always said, let's err on the side of life. There's a story in the New York Times where they talk about this baby that had surgery in utero. And they talk about how this baby, the mother was opened up and this microsurgery happened. And they sewed mom back up and the baby is fine. The baby, I thought it was a fetus. I thought it wasn't life. And yet the New York Times describes this, quote, baby as feisty. Wait. Could we have you describe the silent scream of the feisty baby as another, quote, doctor is cutting it up? Do you think any of those 60 million children were, quote, feisty? Or was that just a lump of flesh? The only reason why the New York Times says that that's a baby is because the person involved, the person who is protecting that child, the person who is, it is growing inside of them, have decided that that is a baby. And so they will print the pictures of that baby, and they will talk about the miracle of the doctors and what the doctors did to save this life, because we care so much about life. And yet we really don't. Thou shalt not kill. We always argue about, well, that's war. And it's actually thou shalt not kill. It's thou shalt not murder. What does it mean, murder? Premeditated. That you know what you're doing and you're premeditating someone's death. That's not killing. That's murder. I bet you God didn't think that he had to put thou shalt not kill your child. It's bizarre because as technology advances and proves to us that this is a child, as we can see the child inside of the womb, we can count the fingers, we can count the toes, we can watch it move, we can watch it grow. As technology improves that we can actually cut a woman open and perform surgery on that child and then sew her back up to protect that child, we get more and more callous to that's life. And yet, in the founding era, it was known as murder. From the moment of what was called the quickening. The moment the mother felt the baby move, she knew it was a baby. There was no other way. It looks like you're putting on some weight there, Martha. The moment the baby moved, it's murder. because they knew for sure life was inside of her. We know life is inside. There's a maternal instinct. The maternal instinct, do not mess with a mother and her child. I believe that comes from God, because he first gives the child to her to protect. We hold these truths self-evident. We don't kill our children. We hold these truths to be self-evident. That life is sacred. I hold this truth to be self-evident. That's a baby in you, not a lump of flesh. I hold this truth to be self-evident, that every child comes out differently. It doesn't matter who you are or who you think that child will be. They're all unique. How many scientists, how many philosophers, how many artists, how many great industrialists, how many Frederick Douglasses have we killed? I take that back. How many have we murdered? Liberty Safe is our sponsor. They keep coming out with the best deals in, and 2018 is not any different. They have really, really great deals on the Liberty Safe that is made right here in America. This is the best peace of mind, knowing that your valuables, that your pictures, your documents, your firearms, anything that you have, and you know, it's really hard to understand. When you get a Liberty Safe and you start thinking, okay, I should put that in a safe. Oh, you know what? I should make sure that if there was a fire, that survives. You'd be amazed at how much you do have that you deem irreplaceable, that you just don't even think about. Going on right now through January 22nd, you can get into Liberty Safe's new Tough USA series for $8.99, $9.99, or $1.99, $1,099. Plus, you get Liberty's 12 months interest-free or payments as low as $20 a month on approved credit. Now, you can save big on the huge new powerfully tough Classic, the Classic Select, or the Classic Wide Body Select. So I have a Liberty Safe. Stu has a Liberty Safe. And they are professionally and discreetly installed in your home. We have seen these things survive the California wildfires where there's nothing but the chimney and the Liberty Safe left standing. We have seen them picked up by tornadoes and dropped blocks away, still closed with everything intact. Liberty Safe. Peace of mind that comes from owning something built here in America. The best built safe on the planet, bar none. It's Liberty Safe. LibertySafe.com. Go there now. LibertySafe.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
You know, it's really amazing to me that people think, oh, you know, Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood, that was in the 1920s and 1930s and 40s and 50s. Those were old, crazy, dismissed ideas. Okay. Margaret Sanger, somebody who the left absolutely loves and idolizes, who was a monster, an absolute monster. And they idolize her and they dismiss, well, she said some crazy things. No, her whole life was crazy. Her whole life was to have a pure race. Imagine saying that about a Nazi doctor. Well, I don't agree with everything that he said. It's Mengele, man. The most merciful thing that a large family does to one of its infant members is to kill it. She's not even talking about the baby that's not born. She's saying the infant, kill the infant. She had a book, Women and the New Race, The Wickedness of Creating Large Families. And she argues that because the conditions of large families tend to involve poverty and illness, it's better for everybody involved if a child's life is snuffed out before they have a chance to pose any difficulties for the family. Think of that. Think of that. Now, well, that's old thinking. Is it? Is it? Have you noticed that large families are suddenly irresponsible? That large families suddenly make you a freak? Large families immediately make you somebody that you're like, okay, they got weird stuff going on in their house.
Not to mention how bad for the environment it is and how it's a bad use of resources. We've heard a lot of utilitarian arguments against it as well lately.
We're now even talking about laws that protect people who disparage families. Let me say that again. You shouldn't get in trouble for disparaging large families. There should be a law to protect you to say, you can basically say whatever you want about large families. First, personally, I think you should be able to say whatever you want about any topic. But have you noticed where the left is pushing? Is that a coincidence that this came from Margaret Sanger? How about this one? Margaret Sanger, birth control must lead ultimately to a cleaner race. We should hire 3 or 4 colored ministers, preferably with social service backgrounds and engaging personalities. The most successful educational approach to the Negro is through the religious appeal. We don't want the word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. And the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members. End quote. Okay, that's her. Well, that's old thinking. That's not what Planned Parenthood. Okay. Can you tell me why there are more African Americans killed in New York City by Planned Parenthood than are born? There are more African Americans that are killed before they're born than there are African Americans that are born. It seems to be a out of balance. That's not happening with whites.
Yeah, and the numbers you're talking about from New York City, what was it, 31,328 induced terminations, 24,758 live births. That is cataclysmic. It's the only story the black community should even care about. It's like that big of a deal. And for all that, you know, we constantly deal when we're conservatives with accusations of racism. And, you know, I always find it interesting that if our policies were put in place, there would be millions and millions and millions of more black people alive. With progressive policies, there are millions and millions of less black people alive. You could make all your fake accusations of racism all you want. The bottom line is our policies mean more black people live. Your policies mean more black people die. How can we be the racists?
How can we be the ones that are not feminists because we hate the mother? There would be more women alive, more girls alive. Nobody's standing up for the girls in our society. You're right. You're right, especially when it comes to Planned Parenthood. Do you remember the time just 8 years ago when they said, oh, our money will never go to fund Planned Parenthood? It would never. That was a lie. We are now funding Planned Parenthood. Out of all of the things that we could be talking about, out of everything that is happening in the world, there is nothing that compares to the murder of 60 million people at our own hands on our watch, and we do nothing. There is nothing more important than that.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The countdown to the shutdown. 14 hours, 25 minutes, 24 seconds. Not going to make a difference in your life. I mean, unless you are one of the non-essential people or you're in the military, but they'll pass a continuing resolution to make sure that you're paid, or you'll be paid in 2 weeks. You'll be paid for 4 weeks. So you'll get your money. Other than that, the vast majority of America will make no difference whatsoever in your life. The March for Life is going to be largely ignored. It will be downplayed. It'll be a much bigger crowd than everybody who was wearing the hats for feminism after Trump was inaugurated. But you will not hear that from the mainstream media. And this one actually matters. And it matters in this way, to get us to think. We're not people that are comfortable thinking anymore. We don't want to think about the horrible things. We have really done some miraculous things because we're willing to look at the Christian situation in the Middle East. For some reason, that horror show has connected with us, and we're willing to look at it. Praise God we're willing to look at it. When it comes to abortion, most people are not. And I have to tell you, I have thanked God so many times that my first child's birth, Mary, we thought everything was fine. Because had the doctors told me what they told me right after she was born, she'll never walk, talk, feed herself. She's never going to be anywhere close to self-reliant. I have to tell you, at that time, being 22, however old I was, I think I would have said, honey, I don't want her to live like that. And I would have done the compassionate thing. So I have four reasons why I believe life is important, but two examples in particular where some people would have made the different decision. Mary, one of the greatest joys of my life. And Rafe, who was carried by a 14-year-old girl. Brave 14-year-old girl. And she did the hardest thing ever. She not only carried him to term, she then gave him up, and she didn't want to. I want to take you back to 2004. This is the first monologue I did after the birth and adoption of my son, Rafe. Listen.
My wife and I have been trying to have a baby for over 3 years. Until she got to the point where she was tired, she couldn't take the emotions and the emotional roller coaster every month of possibly, and then no pink line. She finally gave up and said, I'll submit to the will. Whatever that will is, I'll submit. I had felt that there would be a baby boy waiting for us the moment that we were going to adopt, that we would decide to adopt. 5 days later, after we said that, after we had decided and started the process with a family service organization, we got a phone call. Then it came from an email of a 14-year-old girl in Dallas, Texas. This 14-year-old girl loves her baby. But after the labor, She didn't hold the baby. And she said to us before, I want the doctor to hand the baby to you, not to me. And she did. And it was hard to watch. The courage of this 14-year-old, just turned 15 last Friday. In the state of Texas, you have 48 hours. The mother cannot sign the baby over for 48 hours. It's a decision I don't understand, because the decision is made logically, but then at 48 hours, now you kick in emotions. And now the decision, the emotions are ruling, because she sees the baby and she loves the baby. And it becomes real. She started wavering, and we could see how tough it was on her. And honestly, we were praying for God's will. Because if I were in her shoes, I would have done exactly the same thing. I would have wavered. If I were in her shoes, I'm going to go a step further. I don't think I could have done what she did. She was wavering. Tanya and I just didn't think that it was going to happen. Now we're going through the emotions of, we've already attached to this baby. We're going to lose this baby. We went through the paperwork with the family services. And I said, can I see what you're asking her to sign? I've never read a contract that is so unbelievably brutal in its language as this contract, as it should be. And it was very, very clear. You signed this, you have no right to that baby. There's no turning back. Once you sign this, it's over. I looked at the lady, I said, she's never going to sign this. I said, this language is so brutal, she's never going to sign this. She said, the language has to be brutal, because the reality is brutal. She has to know it. My wife and I left for about an hour, and the family met. The family services met. And the 14-year-old girl, the mother of the child, said, I can't do it. I'm not turning my baby over. I can't do it. Everybody left the room. My wife and I were still gone. And a nurse came into the room. Her name's Christy. She came into the room and she sat down with this 15-year-old girl, hugged her, cried, and said, your son will be proud of you for the tough decisions that you're going to make. You can make something of your life and show him what you're made of. As we were standing outside and the decision had been made on who was walking away with the baby, the families parted. We hugged each other. We cried. Only one was walking away with the baby. My wife and I had been gone. We had been asked to leave for that hour. We had been gone. We didn't know what had transpired. I didn't know that the nurse had walked in after everybody had left and said, it's not going to happen. She had tears running down her cheeks, and she hugged me and she said, you have your son. Take him home. Then she whispered in my ear, I don't know how it happened. The Lord was using me. After this nurse had talked to this unbelievable 15-year-old girl, this unbelievable 15-year-old girl made the second hardest decision in her life. It was probably the hardest, but she had just made two. One, to carry the baby, and the second decision, to give the baby away. She signed the paper. We took the baby home. Mom walked away from the hospital with flowers. As I reflect on this story, as tough as this week has been, as much as I didn't want to be there this week after we got into this week, I'm glad that I was there. Because we have a little boy. And little boys like stories of Spider-Man and Superman and Batman. Little boys like stories of bigger-than-life heroes. And I am so glad that I will always be able to tell my son about the biggest hero I've ever met. Faced with a choice on whether to go on with her life and abort the child, she said no. Then when her heart was being ripped out of her chest because she truly loved that little boy, she made the hardest choice and said, I'm giving it to somebody else that can raise it with a mother and a father. I don't need to tell my son about Superman or Spider-Man. When I want to share a hero story with my son, I will just tell him the story of his mom.
I think of that girl now, 30-year-old woman almost. I think about her parents and Rafe's grandparents a lot. I pick up the copy of Pilgrim's Pride that was given to me by his grandmother quite often. Life is a heroic choice. Our sponsor this half hour is LifeLock. Over the holidays, researchers found serious security flaws in chips used in nearly every PC and server and smartphone and tablet produced in the past decade. Anything with an Intel chip in it, it has a backdoor in it. Now, you know, they've sent out some security patches. But they have also said that until all of these chips are made without that backdoor in it, everything is still vulnerable. You know, we're not talking about kids in their basement. We're not talking about kids trying to, you know, hack into you. We're talking about a large-scale, well-financed criminal movement that is trying to steal identity. One in four people have already experienced identity theft, and if you're only monitoring your credit, your identity can be stolen in ways you can't even imagine. That's where LifeLock comes in. They detect a wide range of identity threats, and if you have a problem, somebody here in the U.S. is going to work to fix it. And nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, because quite honestly, I mean, the people are working in Russia to hack in and to steal, use, and destroy lives while we're sleeping. LifeLock doesn't sleep. Join now. Get 10% off with the promo code BECK. 10% off, promo code BECK. 1-800-LIFELOCK. 1-800-LIFELOCK. Or go to LifeLock.com, use the promo code BECK. LifeLock.com, promo code BECK.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Recently.
We were just talking about back when we first started, you know, to really care about things in life. And not a lot of people know this, and you may remember if you're a longtime listener of this program, we were the first group or individual or, you know, any kind of broadcast entity that actually carried a live abortion. I was just asking Stu, I think partly because of that, this clinic, if you will, was shut down.
Yeah, fairly recently too.
Do you remember the sound of that and all of that?
Yes, it was intense, and it was not something I care to really revisit.
I wonder if we should play that back on Monday.
I mean, it's important, I think, to revisit, and you know, it needs to go away. I guess we could do it. I mean, if you think back in those days, it's not something I ever want to hear again in my life.
Yeah.
But you know, it's probably important enough to do.
Yeah, there were a lot of people very upset.
Yes.
A lot of people very
no
upset.
One was happy.
Yeah.
There wasn't anyone who was happy that it happened. I will say that.
Yeah. I haven't obviously listened to it since. I haven't revisited it since. If you listen to it, please don't. If we decide to play it on Monday, please don't tell your friends about the horrors of, you know, let them experience it as you did. Yeah, we'll think about it. Maybe on Monday we'll do that. This is an important weekend for the pro-life movement, and maybe on Monday we'll revisit that. We'll see. You can write us and tell us yes or no. All right, Mr. Bill O'Reilly is coming up next with a review of the week.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Sticking to your New Year's resolution to lose weight is not easy. You need a hand up. You need a little bit of a little help. I know I do, because I come off of the New Year's and then it's like, well, it's a lot of work going on and I'm stressed out and we're getting into everything. And then all of a sudden someone brings in cookies and it's downhill from then on. You need someone to kind of be on your side. That's what I consider Riduzone. Riduzone is a cool product launched by a local company here in Texas. And they did all the work with the science and they decided the best way to kind of help you stop those appetite cravings that you have during the day is a study that looked at what the best parts of olive oil are. I don't know science. You know more about science probably than I do. But I can tell you this. I've been taking Riduzone for a while now, really since the beginning of the year. Lost about 10 pounds since I started. And it contains a patented ingredient that has been shown to boost metabolism and reduce appetite while helping you burn fat. You don't have to worry about, it's not about like trying to make you eat only certain types of foods. It's about making your overall experience just a little bit better. Take a little bit off the top and you're able to lose weight with the easiness of taking Riduzone. Riduzone is on sale right now, 30% off with a code STU. So if you go to Riduzone.com, RIDUZONE.com, that's Riduzone.com, and use the offer code STU, you're going to get 30% off. Give it a shot. It's a new year, new you, Riduzone.com. Offer code STU.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Xanax? I don't know how we're going to get through the next few hours. 13 hours, 54 minutes, 25 seconds. We're that close to the end of government, to the end of peace, to the end of of life as we know it, really. I mean, mass starvation and chaos is right around the corner. They're talking about shutting down non-essential parts of the government. What are we going to do? It's like Armageddon. It's too terrible to even think about. No, it's not Armageddon. It's Armageddon, and the devil has a cohort, and it's Voldemort. I mean, it's everything wicked all together. Okay, I'm sorry. I had to. If you have small children in the car, kids, you know, Uncle Glenn's just kidding. He's just making something up. Everything's fine. Oh, I can't lie to them. We're all dead soon. 13 hours, 53 minutes, 29 seconds now. We are panic. Really panic. If Democrats and Republicans can't come together on an agreement on the budget by later today. Kids, I'm going to tell you the truth. Non-essential services and personnel may be told to go home. Yes, everybody's going to still be in the missile silos and everything's going to, you know, they're going to be up in the airplane towers and all of that stuff. Yeah, of course. But my God, man, non-essential services, non-essential services. The country's going to come to a stop. The world, it's like, it's as if every cell inside of your body suddenly turns inside out and explodes. That's what's going to happen. Yes, all the people that work for the government that, you know, actually do something that we really count on, they're still going to be there. They'll be there this weekend. They'll be there next week. They'll be there for months. In fact, they'll never, ever, ever be able to be fired or lose their job. Those people will remain. Most people won't even. It's like it's as insidious as cancer. For a long time, you don't know it. That's how this could be. For a long time, you might not even notice that the government isn't making crazy laws, that the government isn't doing nut things, that these people who have non-essential jobs, you won't even notice that it really is non-essential. Glenn, what about the military? Yeah. They're not going to get paid. Yes, they are. Yes. Yeah, because eventually, and it'll take a couple of weeks until whichever political side is won, they'll pass the budget and then they'll be retroactively paid. You know, if they miss a check, most of the federal employees in the military are paid biweekly. It'll just look like they were paid for 4 weeks instead of 2 weeks. So they get that. They get that. If it lasts more than 2 weeks, they actually will miss a check, but that's not gonna happen. Oh, some of us wish. Oh yeah, the naysayers, the revolutionaries, the anarchists would like to see that government shut down for a little longer, but kids, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't mean to panic. I don't. I'm just having a bad day. You know. These anarchists say it's really like just a paid vacation for non-essential employees. I mean, they're going to be gone for 2 weeks. They can take a vacation and then they get paid for that 2 weeks, you know, in 2 weeks. So I don't know why I am suddenly praying for an impasse in kind of the same way that kids pray for a school snow day, you know? Oh, some could say that the threat of a government shutdown is possibly the most overhyped and overblown political tool on Capitol Hill, because they do it all the time. And, nobody starves to death. Nobody is rejected, you know, at the hospital. Nobody's life-saving medicine. Planes don't fall out of the sky. It's like life goes on. It's crazy like that. It's in reality, it's like if a private company like Apple, you know, was managed as poorly as the United States government, you know, it'd be shutting down all the time. And they wouldn't just be sending their non-essentials home for a paid vacation. They'd be firing them for good. In fact, if they could find a way to keep the Department of Defense separate, a government shutdown now and then might actually be a good thing. Yeah, I mean, I want safe meat. I want air traffic control. I want defense. Congress? The rest of that crap, nah, not so much, really. No. No. Anything that forces Washington, D.C. to stare their incompetence in the face, to actually see how non-essential they really are, oh, man, that's okay in my book.
It's Friday, January 19th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly, have you stored your food yet? Are you in your shelter yet? My God, man, 13 hours, 48 minutes, and 44 seconds before the government shuts down and all life as we know it stops. Bill, are you there? Have you already starved to death? Are you there, Bill?
Me, I'm good. Okay. I'm good. I was just worried, listening to the piano.
Yeah. All right. Are you okay? Are you prepared for the chaos that is coming our way with a government shutdown?
I'm scared. I'm very, very frightened. I think that we have to move to Belarus.
To Belarus. Okay. Yeah. You got to find that on a map.
It's near the Caucasus.
Uh-huh.
It's a really good place.
All right.
And
that's the place where people go
to open the government so they can't shut it down.
Okay, good. You know, this is really ridiculous. First of all, the hypocrisy of the media, where when the Republicans did this, they were bad. When the Republicans are fighting against this, they're bad. There's just nobody with credibility on this.
Well, look, Beck, you know, all we can do as patriots, you and me and Stu. Is Stu still alive, by the way? Is he on the planet?
I've returned from the dead, yes, thank you.
Okay, excellent. All we can do, all right, is just basically pray that the country will be on the map tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it might not.
Yeah.
Something might happen.
Yeah.
Asteroids.
You know, what is it with it? I'm serious about this, Bill. How is it? Have you seen the new movie, The Post?
I refuse because of Meryl Streep. I'm not going to go.
Good for you.
I did see Winston at your recommendation. I saw the Churchill movie.
What'd you think?
Very good, of course.
Yeah, Winston, Darkest Hour.
Right,
yeah.
But I was just, you know, trying to be in a colloquial way.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Friendly to you, Beck.
Sure.
But I am not going to see any movie that Meryl Streep appears in because she is not a good person.
Yeah, you're a patriot. I'm too lazy.
I'll also say she's not a good actress. Let's put it that way.
No, she is a good actress.
I disagree with you, Bill.
I saw the movie.
I think she's good.
Okay, can I speak here? Because I saw the movie, so I violated your principles and your principles. she was actually good in this. And I will tell you that I was surprised. I thought it would be, you know, just a hatchet job. And at one point in the movie, in fact, they revisit this point several times, that, you know, this started with Truman and then Eisenhower. And the first time they say this, and even Jack, and they stop. And they're like, they're all looking at each other like, but he was our friend. And they discover through this that Jack Kennedy was their friend because he was trying to get them to not print any bad stuff about them. And they get it in the movie, but they don't seem to really get that in real life, do they? Ever.
Well, look, I mean, I'm what they call a person who believes in America's greatness, but is very sad, as I think you are too, that we're seeing it vanish, because people, number one, are now becoming obsessed with machinery and gadgets and devices, and therefore they don't think about their country and really don't care about it. And the press is as corrupt as it's ever been in the history of our republic, and the politicians remain weasels. So the devastating combination of all three is really starting to worry me, because it's going to shake the foundations of this nation. So for me to go to a movie and watch Meryl Streep, who epitomizes the decline of the country to me, I can't do it. I just can't.
Well, I understand. You know, I understand that.
I am going to see that Afghanistan movie, The Tough 12 or whatever. I'm going to go to see that because I still think that people are noble. Americans are noble.
Yeah.
But boy, oh boy, we got to really wake up and see what's going on here, because it's frightening.
Are you surprised at all, Bill, when we're talking about the shutdown, the blatant hypocrisy from just a few years ago.
Why would anybody be surprised when people like Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell, all right, the two most powerful senators, they're basically in business for themselves, not for the folks. And everybody has to know that, and I think everybody does know it at this point.
Do we have the hang on?
They're so wrapped up in their machines and their devices that they go, what can I do? Let me play this game, or let me go to this site. You know, oh my God.
Let me play the audio of Chuck Schumer during the last shutdown, where he was railing on you know, the evil Ted Cruz and the Republicans.
But we want to negotiate without a gun to our head. Speaker Boehner comes in and he says, basically, it's sort of like this. Someone goes into your house, takes your wife and children hostage, and then says, let's negotiate over the price of your house. You know, we could do the same thing on immigration. We believe strongly in immigration reform. We could say we're shutting down the government. We're not going to raise the debt ceiling until you pass immigration reform. It would be governmental chaos.
I know.
And that's exactly what they're doing now. It's this DACA thing. That's the point you're making, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, he used the example that they're now using, and he said it would be governmental chaos.
Right. Because now it's a story about, well, we think we can destroy Donald Trump, and we better do it fast because the economy is so good, and we don't have any answer for that at all since we all voted against the tax reform. That we better get Armageddon on the table now. That's what this is all about.
And these people know it. It's not like they've forgotten. They know it, and they don't care. They're just soulless.
Well, they could. They'll get a DACA deal if they just sign off on building some part of a wall.
Yes.
I mean, Trump will take. He'll take a lean-to at this point, Trump.
Yes, he will.
Something.
Yes, he will.
Give me a few branches down there. We'll make a treehouse.
You're exactly right.
Give me anything.
Yes. So why are they not? So why are they playing it this way? Or do they want the division and confrontation? You know, it's like, you know, if you really
can't. I just told you, Beck. They fear that the economy is going to overwhelm their. Jihad to get Trump out of office. That's what it's all about. The economy is so hot and things are going so well economically for the USA that if they don't get Trump now, and if they don't create chaos now, the Democratic Party is going to be in big trouble. That's why they're doing it.
More with Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com, author of multiple books. His latest is Killing England, BillO'Reilly.com. Fresh new year has begun. You're setting new goals in your business, and you need some really good qualified people. ZipRecruiter is there for you. ZipRecruiter has transformed how you go about finding people for your business. You can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with a single click. Okay, that's really good. Save you a lot of time. But are the qualified candidates going to see that ad? This is what sets ZipRecruiter apart. ZipRecruiter then goes out and actively looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. Hey, did you see this job? So other hiring sites, they don't do this. They don't depend on the... they just depend on the right candidates finding you. They don't depend on themselves to go out and find them. That's what you want. This is why 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in the first day. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. ZipRecruiter has been used by, you know, Fortune 100, 500 and small businesses all over the country for a reason. You're going to find the right person for your job quickly. ZipRecruiter. Try it for free right now. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We're with Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com, author of the new book, Killing England, reviewing the week with Bill. Bill, you brought up the economy, and you know, a new study shows that the Dow is growing faster now than under any other president in their first year, except for FDR. It has made tremendous growth. The tax plan, which everyone said, oh, the tax plan and trickle down economics, we're now able to see with our own eyes which companies are moving the minimum wage to $15 an hour because of the tax plan. I mean, it is accomplishing so many progressive goals, you know, using conservative principles. And we're seeing the economy start to move in the right direction. Do you have any comment on that before I go into a second part?
The comment that I have is that it is the only thing that was going to save Donald Trump. That's it.
Okay.
Okay.
Which,
so that's why everything else that happens in Washington circles around it. Go ahead.
It's the economy, stupid. So let me go.
Yeah, but it's more than that, though. The hate Trumpers thought they had him.
Yes.
They want to overturn the election. They want him out.
Correct.
All right. They thought they had it. But now there's doubt because of the economy.
So now let me show you a price of tweeting. 538 just did a study of the, what is it, last five or six presidents? Still?
Yeah, last six. Yeah.
Okay. And they showed where the economy was and where their approval rating was. And
so there's a trend line that's pretty clear that everyone is pretty much, if you're the more popular the economy or the more
robust,
positive the economy is, the better your approval rating. And all the presidents fall pretty much on this one line. Donald Trump is the one exception to this. He's nowhere near the line. He winds up having a 30-point differential from where his approval rating should be as opposed to where it actually is based on the economy.
So the theory is, and I agree with it, if he wasn't tweeting, if he wasn't picking fights, these nonsensical things, he would probably be 20 or 30 points higher right now, because that's, according to history, that's where he should be because of the economy.
Well, there are two things. I agree with that, in but I don't know if it's that pronounced, because it takes a little time for events to catch up with the folks. So yes, the economy and those of us who report on the nation, we know and see what's happening. But people in Ebbing, Missouri, is going to take them a little time to digest it and to see for themselves it's benefiting them. That's number one. There's a lag time between the polls and actual events. And number two, there's never been a president in this republic who's been attacked by the media the way Donald Trump has been attacked. And not only the media, but the entertainment industry as well. And the combination in our distracted society is devastating, particularly for people who don't pay attention, who don't really know what the economy is, who don't have any investments. So therefore, those two factors are suppressing his approval rating. But I do agree that he brings on all kinds of horror to himself.
And
I've said that from the jump.
The story about him taking that mental agility test is, to me, nonsense, except for this one thing, that somebody in the administration, they know clearly that the left will use the 25th Amendment if they have to.
If they can.
And so the only reason why he took that mental agility test was just to head it off at the pass and say, there's not a problem with me at all.
Well, it was also an in-your-face because nobody around Donald Trump believes that the guy is dithering. Look, I did tremendous research on this whole thing for killing Reagan, because Reagan was actually in the exact same position.
Yeah.
Although it was kept from the public. It was his guys who were worried after he got shot whether he would recover mentally.
Right.
And there was a test given to Reagan by his own people. It didn't get public. So, but this is more of an in-your-face. We know Trump's not, you know, blathering and sitting there in his bathrobe. So we're going to do this.
Okay. When we come back, we want to talk about Trump, Kelly, the border wall, and much more with Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This weekend is the Walk of Life, the pro-life movement. It will not receive the coverage that the anti-Trump women's movement received, although the crowds will be bigger, and yet the press won't point that out to you. It is the, I think, 45th anniversary of it. Bill, the Supreme Court is hearing now a case out of California trying to overturn the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which I think they spent a lot of time doing, but they are hearing a case about how pro-life centers and adoption centers now are going to be required by the state to prominently display Planned Parenthood posters and abortion clinics with their phone number. Your thoughts on this?
Well, it's ridiculous, and that's an intrusion into free enterprise, religious beliefs, everything else. So I expect the Supreme Court will do the right thing there. I was heartened to see that 61% of the American public agrees that there should be some limitations on abortion.
I saw a number today. It was 73.
Okay. And that, again, goes back to, you know, once the folks put down their devices and start to think about things, they usually arrive at the right conclusions. But you got to ask yourself this fundamental question. And why is the state of California, the New York Times, MSNBC, on and on, why are they so bent upon having as many abortions as possible? Why? I mean, I think it was Bill Clinton who said that abortion should be rare and safe. I mean, I think it was him. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have a movement that wants abortion. So why else would you put a Planned Parenthood poster in a pro-life center? Because I want a woman to have an abortion. I want that. Jerry Brown or a judge on the Ninth Circuit, whatever it may be. So you say, why? Why? I mean, I understand the freedom aspect and the, you know, women controlling their own bodies and all of that argument. I mean, morally, it's a different play. But I understand a secular argument, but I don't understand why any human being would want the destruction of a potential human being. I don't understand it. Do you?
Yeah, the only way I can understand it is through the lens of evil, which I think Planned Parenthood and Margaret Sanger were. I mean, I think that was...
Is Jerry Brown evil? Is Jerry Brown's a former Jesuit priest, all right? Is he evil? Are the judges on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals evil? Is the editor of the New York Times evil? You know, maybe they are. I don't know.
No, I think that...
I mean, if I'm sitting in a room and I'm asking the question I just asked you, why would you want more of these things? Why?
So I have to tell you, Bill, I'm reading a new book. Let me see if I can find it. I started it last night, and it is absolutely fascinating. It's really well researched. I mean, it's from the Yale Press. It is called... Hold on just a second. Let me pull it up on my Kindle. Hold on. Called Hitler's Monsters, The Supernatural History of the Third Reich. And it talks about how this literally evil stew was brewing at the higher ups. But the average person didn't necessarily know that. But there was this concerted effort at the top of the ladder to worship, witchcraft, magic, Lucifer, all of these different things. And I think that, you know, we've seen this kind of movement before on the grand scale with the Nazis. That is the same with Planned Parenthood. If you look at, you know, Margaret Sanger, if you look at her words, she's a stone cold killer. And I don't believe that everybody at Planned Parenthood is that way. In fact, I've talked to nurses who have woken up and said, I thought I was doing good. I think there's a lot of people that are just conned into it.
Maybe, but it's a fundamental question of destroying life. So you're going to make an argument that, well, if a woman is pregnant, it's life after 18 weeks. No, no, 24. Nope, 33. Okay, number one, no human beings qualify to do that. Nobody knows, all right? And number two, why are you making such an argument? Why? For what reason? It's already legal. Abortion is already legal in the country, okay? And that's not going to be overturned. So you have an option to get an abortion if you're a woman. But now we have a movement that wants abortions. And I think that's where the Sanger thing comes in. All right, the eugenics and the, you know, we only want healthy babies and all of that stuff, which was where that was the Nazi credo. That's what they did. All right. But when I see a person like Jerry Brown, I mean, who's got a very strong Catholic background and actually went into the priesthood, stand by and allow this stuff and don't say anything about it. And other politicians, too, like Andrew Cuomo from a Catholic family here in New York. And they kind of foster this climate of permissive death, I call it. So it's no big deal. If it's an inconvenience, here's the clinic. You walk in, you pay a few dollars, and you walk out. And we don't even want you to pay a few dollars. We want Beck and O'Reilly to pay for it.
Well, I think
their tax money.
I think,
all right?
I think, Bill, that what we're seeing, though, is, you know, we're starting to see the turn of the French Revolution. You know, it started out as equality and everything else, and then it turned into something entirely different. And we're seeing what it's now turning into. I mean, you look at the environmental movement. It started out as, let's take care of the planet. Okay, we all agree. Now it's planet over people. Now it's, if you disagree with their claims and their solutions, possibly you should go to jail. Let's clean up.
They want to kill you.
Yes. Let's
jail. They want you dead. I mean, that's what happened to me with Soros and that money. And we got to kill him. We got to get O'Reilly off the air. But that's not enough. We want him dead. So yes, you're at that level in some of the really crazy precincts.
No, but I think this is what the Democratic Party is becoming, and it is scaring the average Democrat when they'll side with Antifa, which the average Democrat knows that. Wait a minute, that's not right. I mean, talking Heartland Democrat. You know, fine, okay, transgender. I don't hate anybody who's transgender, but now 93 different genders? That's the lunatic fringe. You know, tear down the statues. Okay, well, you know, you can make a point on this one, but now we're into George Washington. It's the lunatic fringe, and I hope that there is a point where the mainstream middle American Democrat says, okay, these people are nuts.
Well, it's got to be harnessed. See, that's the problem. You don't have anyone harnessing the backlash. You know, everybody says to me, when's the backlash coming? When's the backlash coming? And I'm saying, well, who's going to harness the backlash? Yeah. Certainly not the press.
Yep.
They're not going to do that. When you have a student group at the University of Texas, Austin, putting out that they want to set police officers on fire and then using a picture of a French policeman in Paris actually on fire when he got hit with a Molotov cocktail and saying, yeah, this is what we want to do. And then the president of the University of Texas says and does nothing about it. You've reached critical mass.
You have.
Okay. But who's going to harness it? Who's going to present it to the American people or the Democratic Party and say, you have got to speak out against this? Who is going to do that? And there's nobody there anymore.
This has not been a fun conversation with you. It's not.
Mark, I have you're the guiding light here on these interviews. I have to follow the path that you set. All right. But I want to get back to, let's just build a treehouse on the border and get the government up and running. That's all Trump wants.
Did
you know? Just anything.
It's amazing how they are. It's amazing how they could get things accomplished and they don't see it and won't do it.
No, it's all blood sport now.
Yeah.
It's just we have to destroy them and get them out of office, and we're not going to do anything other than that. That's what we're going to do. Not one Democrat voted for the tax reform. Not one. And now, when it's working, they got a big problem. So they've got to obscure and they've got to create chaos, and Trump himself helps them do it. So that, I mean, that's the thing. Reagan never did that. All right? He got attacked, but he didn't help his attackers.
Yes.
Trump, like, if Trump were at the Alamo, he would have opened the door for the Mexican troops.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. The latest book is Killing England. And, Bill, it's always good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Give it away. That's quite a statement coming from Bill, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and it's true. It's interesting when you look at he's referencing that chart that we talked about earlier. The other president that is missing the trend line more than in the others was Reagan, who was about 10 points lower than where he should have been based on the economic information. And
that's the media. Yeah. That's a 10-point disadvantage because of the media.
So Trump is 30 points below that. So you either believe one of two things. Either the attacks are three times worse than Reagan, and you might believe that.
They are.
I don't know if they're three times worse. Reagan, they were constantly calling him insane.
Yeah.
They were calling
him a traitor. It's very similar to this.
Although a different era, right?
Yeah.
And then the other side of that would be his sort of playing into it. And that's people make arguments all the time that I think he really likes that. That's something that I think Trump
really enjoys
the job of being president.
Yeah.
The fact that he gets to control the narrative. Mm-hmm. And he gets to just go back and fire against anybody he doesn't like. I think that's part of it he really likes.
You know, the media may be worse now, but Reagan had no one, not even talk radio, to come to his defense. He had no one coming to his defense.
That's how good the economy was then.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. All right. Blinds.com, the best at what they do. And I've been telling you about them for years, but let me read something that came in from a customer. Her name is Marlene. She lives in Ohio. She's somebody who listens to the program. She said, Blinds.com is by far the most customer-friendly company I have ever experienced. This, I can tell you, is absolutely true. Customer service representatives were very knowledgeable about their products. They took a lot of time helping me with my selections and color. The blinds were easy to install. They look beautiful, and the quality is excellent as well. I highly recommend Blinds.com. I want you to try Blinds.com. Don't take my word for it. Blinds.com, perfect blind shade, shutters, drapes, anything you want for the upgrade of your home. You'll get free samples. You'll get free shipping, free design consultation. They'll guide you through installation step by step. They'll help you find somebody. If you don't want to do it yourself, they'll help you find somebody. And they are with you the entire time if you want them. Find out. 20 million Americans have made this the number one place to buy window treatments. Why? Because they are who they say they are. Now through January 28th, save 20% site-wide at blinds.com/Beck. You got to go to blinds.com/Beck to get that 20% site-wide. Rules and restrictions do apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
There's a couple of things going on with the Russian GPS thing. They released some of the testimony of the guy from, that did the GPS file. I've never seen so much hearsay presented as shocking fact in my life. He's like, well, we think that might mean, which could have been, that's interesting, but we don't know if that's true. And they're releasing it like, here it is. Here's the smoking gun. And yet on the other side, there is a memo that the Republicans want declassified. And I think the president has the right to declassify stuff. I think he could do that.
Well, he could do, I think, more seriously, the source material,
which would be better than than a memo written by a Republican.
Right. So there's a memo that summarizes some of these offenses written by a Republican that they want released.
It's a FISA offense. It's all of the things that the Obama administration did, that how they used FISA to try to go after Donald Trump. And you know what? I want to see that stuff. I don't want to see the Republican memo. I want to see the real raw material.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing the Republican memo too.
Yeah,
you know, that'd be great, because it would probably, you know, put it in a way to try to understand the, you know,
yes,
the flow of information.
Sure.
And it would be, you know, it would be an interesting case to see.
Yeah,
it would be only part of the story, though. You know, again, like you could say release the memo all you want, which is like a big social media thing today, which is great. I mean, I want to see more of the information as well. The bottom line, though, is that the president has control of this information and he can declassify it. And if he doesn't, you have to wonder whether it's worth more with everybody speculating about it than if we actually saw it. Just go ahead, release it, redact the parts you need to redact.
I'm so sick of all of this. And I just want transparency.
Right, exactly.
I mean, geez, we've been talking about this since 2008. Transparency, more transparent. Are we going to be the most transparent? No, you weren't. No, you weren't. You did more against the press, Mr. Obama, than anybody since Woodrow Wilson. You know, you weren't transparent. And now we're not transparent again. Release the memo and release the source material. Take out any names of anybody who could actually be hurt or is an innocent bystander. Let's see. Let's just get this over with.
We should also point out that people talking about these abuses of power by government are the same people that just voted for warrantless wiretapping to be continued.
Correct.
So, which doesn't make any sense to me at all.
If you had all of this evidence that FISA was being misused so badly, why would you vote to have it reinstated? It's nuts. Transparency is the answer.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.
So the economy is doing pretty well, and we're all excited about that, of course. You know, it's only been a few years since the kind of meltdown of 2008, and you kind of remember going through that process. I remember going through it as a homeowner and trying to deal with selling a house in that environment out of state. It was a complete disaster. It's impossible to do, and you have to find somebody to bring you through that process that you really, really believe in, somebody that shares your values, someone who understands what's important to you, someone who cares about the outcome of what you're doing with your biggest investment that you'll ever make. Glenn and Tanya started a company. It's called Real Estate Agents I Trust, and they had tried to sell their home and had bad luck with it, and wanted to try to find a way to screen through people, to find people who believed in the same sort of honest business transaction that we all want. People who listen to the show, people who have the same sensibilities as you. What he does, he goes through and his team screens all these real estate agents, over 1,200 all across America now. They're qualified by the Glenn's team, and their experience, their marketing plans, their character, all of that goes into this formula. And then what comes out on the other side is this site, Real Estate Agents I Trust. It makes it easy for you to find a great agent in your area. If you need to sell a house fast and for the most money, if you're looking to buy, go to realestateagentsitrust.com and you'll be introduced to the best agent in your town. Let these agents earn your business. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So Doc has been in the news lately a lot. Democrats in Congress threatening a government shutdown over DACA. So much hand-wringing from the left over DACA that you would think it was a matter of life or death. Let's be honest, we know it's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. And there is an actual life and death matter, but the left mysteriously ignores it. Imagine for a second if Americans on the left were half as passionate about protecting the unborn as they are about DACA. How many lives would be saved? It is, to me, incomprehensible that progressives promote the murder of babies. It's ironic because they're the party of compassion, right? They're supposed to be the party that stands up for the little guy, the poor, the people who can't fight for themselves, the complete defenseless human. Now, I'm not making light of that compassion because we're all called to have it. Liberals don't have a monopoly on compassion, and they shouldn't. But my honest question is, if you're so committed to compassion and helping the oppressed, the disadvantaged, the most defenseless of our society, how on earth are you killing children? Why doesn't liberal compassion extend to the most helpless among us, the unborn people? And if you don't believe they're people, well, that's a lie. It is. It's a lie. It's a lie that you've crafted for yourself to make yourself able to live with what is happening. And even the New York Times just ran a story about surgery on an unborn fetus. And as they're talking about this baby having surgery in the womb, they talk about how this, quote, baby is so feisty. Unborn babies are people, no matter how you try to spin it by calling them fetuses or anything else. Perhaps referring to a person as a fetus numbs the conscious just enough to allow you to stuff the dead human body into the disposal bag. Maybe. I mean, it's happened before. This is what happened with all the actual decent people in Germany that just turned the other way. They stopped seeing Jews as people. The thought of it is appalling. Most people, regardless of politics, would be horrified at the sight, and they would recognize it as evil, and that's why nobody ever shows it to you. The left champions the overlooked and the oppressed, if you can get out of the womb alive. Until then, you're on your own. Do you remember Senator Doug Jones? He said recently, "Once that baby is born, I'm going to be there for that child. That's where I become a right-to-lifer." Okay, all right, okay. I'm sure that's great comfort to the children that have come so close to getting you to care, but just had their head in the canal. The rest of their body, that was human, but their head. Defenseless babies are one thing, but the helpless children of illegal immigrants? Well, that requires a whole different level of outrage, doesn't it? Last fall, Planned Parenthood, the president, she didn't even notice this. She expressed her fury over President Trump's plan to end DACA, and she wrote, without any sense of irony, "Here at Planned Parenthood, we firmly believe that every person has the right to live, work, and raise a family freely without the threat of deportation or separation, and we will never stop fighting for this vision, except when you're killing babies." I'll never understand the moral gymnastics that let a person kill a baby with one fist and shake the other fist in a dramatic protest over dreamers and deportation. Now, let me flip this on its head. Imagine for a minute if Americans on the right were half as passionate about protecting the unborn as we all seem to be about building a border wall. Imagine how many lives would be saved. In a sense, the burden falls more on the right because protecting the unborn is actually part of a party platform, and we actually have not tried to convince ourselves it isn't life. We all recognize that that's a baby, and we say we believe it, but do we put those words in actions? I'm not condemning you. I'm condemning me. I should be at the March for Life this year. I went to my first march against abortion for the first time in my life this year. I mean, at least the Democrats aren't the hypocrites that I am when it comes to murdering babies. They're unashamedly in favor of it. I talk a good game in private circles and just recently on the air. We have to really examine ourselves, our apathy, our silence, perhaps our hypocrisy, to say we're pro-life yet never lift a finger to help those in the struggle. It's bad. It's bad saying I'm for Frederick Douglass or I'm for Martin Luther King, but I got to show up. Yeah, I'm against what's happening in those concentration camps in Germany, but I mean, I'm not going to do anything about it.
What are we afraid of? What are we waiting for? Look at the difference just this audience made with the Nazarene Fund. Thousands of people were saved. And when we're silent, we're complicit.
Today is the March for Life in Washington, D.C. As we think about the massive holocaust, I was going to say tragedy. It's a holocaust. Let's, each of us, try to recommit ourselves to defending the unborn, to defend life and all that that means. And to the thousands of men and women who are faithfully serving on the front lines of this battle, helping women every single day, saving unborn lives, people who are adopting children, thank you. For those people who have taken a bus, have sent their children to Washington, have taught them what this is really all about, those who are standing for the 45th time this year in Washington, thank you for your diligence and your sacrifice. Be encouraged. Persevere in your work. Because it's nothing short of life and hope. There's a lot of talk lately about dreamers. They're getting ready to shut down the government over it. But there is another set of dreamers that few are talking about. You're not going to see those dreamers on TV. You're not going to read about them in the headlines. But they are there nonetheless. They are real dreamers. Dreamers that never had the opportunity to wake up. An opportunity that was stolen from them. Not because of war, not because of famine, not because of disease, not because of anything that we always say is so important. These dreamers will never open their eyes or take a breath in this life because of a war on truth. A famine of the soul. A disease of our own minds. These dreamers will never open their eyes and squint into the light. And yet we are the ones who are blind to their reality. These dreamers are the true victims, the aborted children. Last year, Planned Parenthood murdered 321,384 children. That is more than the number of American soldiers killed in World War I, Korea, and Vietnam combined. Where is the headline? How many children have died today? Imagine the potential achievement, the joy, the intelligence that we will never know. This is a holocaust, and it is happening right now all around us. It's big. It's overwhelming. No, it's not. It's really not. It all boils down to you. Will you at least really look at it, knowing that looking at it may change your life? Will you follow the path? Will you begin to pull the thread and commit?
It's Friday, January 19th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Abby Johnson, she is the CEO and founder of And Then There Were None. She was a woman. I would like to ask her to tell her story in case you've never heard it, because it's a story of redemption and love. Abby, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me, Glenn. It's always good to be on.
You are in Washington, I assume.
I am. Yeah. I'm backstage at the March for Life.
Okay. I know you've got a million things going on. Can you first tell me what is happening today and how many people are showing up and what it's like?
Sure. So 45th annual March for Life. I mean, it's sad that we're still here 45 years after Roe v. Wade. But we see, significant change in our culture. The overwhelming majority of people here are under the age of 30. I'm 37, and they look at me like I'm ancient. So it's young people here. In fact, a few years ago, the president of NARAL came to the March for Life, and in her report, she said, "I looked around, and I thought to myself, they are all so young. And that's true. And I think one of the reasons is because, you know, we have a generation of people now that their first baby picture was of themselves in the womb. It's not, you know, being a child in the womb is not something that's abstract. They can see themselves. They could see that they were potentially at risk for abortion. But they were able to live. And so this is very real for them. And it's a great time coming together, but also a time of remembrance for, you know, the 60 million plus lives that have been destroyed by abortion. And that's just the unborn. I mean, then we have to consider all the women and men who are also suffering from their abortion decisions. We expect probably between 400 and 500,000 people to be here in Washington today, although, you know, CNN will probably say there were a few thousand. So
yeah, doesn't matter.
But it's always a good time.
So Abby, would you just share your story? Because I like what I think you are the key to unlocking so many doors, because you actually worked at Planned Parenthood, and you're not somebody who is, you know, drives the abortion truck, you know, that is shouting at people as they go into Planned Parenthood. You're a person who has compassion, and that's what led you to Planned Parenthood in the first place till you figured it out.
Right. So I worked at Planned Parenthood for 8 years, got involved as a college kid. That's the prime target for Planned Parenthood is college-age kids. I'd say that wherever there are vulnerable women, so is Planned Parenthood. And there are tens of thousands of vulnerable students on college campuses, and you better believe that Planned Parenthood is right there along with them. I didn't know anything about Planned Parenthood, but they told me that they were all about helping women. And certainly as a woman, I want to help other women. And so got involved with them, ended up rising through the ranks, was a clinic director with them for many years, and left in October of 2009 after witnessing a live ultrasound-guided abortion procedure where I saw a 13-week-old baby fight and struggle for his life against the abortion instruments, and ultimately lost his life. And I knew then that two things were true, that life was, in fact, in the womb, and that there was humanity in the womb. And if those two things were true, then I was on the wrong side of this debate. And so I left. And when I left, Planned Parenthood sued me, tried to take me to court, tried to get a permanent gag order against me so that I would not be able to speak out about my experiences at Planned Parenthood and all the things that I knew. And they obviously lost. And then a couple of years later, I started an organization called And Then There Were None. And we actively reach out to abortion clinic workers and try to get them out of the abortion industry. And to date, in the past few years, we have helped 419 abortion clinic workers leave the industry, find help and hope and healing in Christ, and get them new jobs and life-affirming situations. And that 419 also includes 7 full-time abortion doctors who now work in life-affirming medical practices.
What was it that was the key to the doctors know? What was the key to turn them?
Yeah, they know. A lot of times they've known for a while, and they have wanted to get out for a while. But I think almost all the doctors that we have helped to leave, there's a lot of baggage that comes along with them, because when you are aborting babies, you are also usually living a pretty immoral lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And so there's tax issues. There's, you know, many, many divorces. There's, you know, all of these issues with children, custody. And so there's a lot of baggage that comes along with them. And they just think, I'm never going to get out of this. I'm never going to be able to get my head above water, because performing abortion is a very lucrative job. And they think that they can't do it. And, you know, we just show them that, look, your soul is more important than the money that you're bringing in every year. And we're going to help you. We're going to help you get your head above water. But you've got to trust us.
Abby, what is the one thing that maybe has been done in the past that you hope to change with people who are pro-life? What is the thing that, if you could have everybody here today, this is the message that we should be carrying?
So we've got to be carrying a message of love. And oftentimes, you know, I mean, there's life and death in the power of the tongue, right? And in this case, in the times that we're living in now, it's the power of our keyboard. And I wish that I could, you know, talk to every pro-lifer and instruct them on how to respond to people online. People are watching us. Women who have had abortions, they're watching us. They're watching how we respond. And when you call them murderers, when you say hateful things about them, when you say that God will never forgive them, they're watching that. And you could be impeding someone's progress to finding healing and hope in Christ when a woman is considering having an abortion, when she's trying to make that decision and she sees you online saying, you know, women who do that, oh, they just need to keep their legs closed and what's wrong with them? And they made their bed and they need to lie in it. And they're saying things like that. You have the ability to change someone's life and to actually save a life. When an abortion worker is online, or a former abortion worker is online, and they're looking for resources, they're looking for help, and they see pro-lifers saying, you know, I hope they burn in hell. I pray they burn in hell. God's never going to forgive them. They're baby killers. They're watching you. And I just wish that I could help everybody understand that our words are so powerful, and underneath everything we do, it should be undergirded in love and in life. And in mercy, because we have all received mercy and graces from Christ, and we should be extending that to everyone.
Abby Johnson, thank you so much. I'm glad your voice was heard today.
Thanks.
Abby Johnson is the CEO and founder of Then There Were None, and she wrote a book called The Walls Are Talking. You can get her on Twitter, at Abby Johnson.
Studies show that burglary, anti-theft systems, burglar devices, stop burglaries. It stops them dead in their tracks. And yet it happens every 8 seconds, but that's because somebody doesn't have their house wired for a security system. I want to make sure that you never have your house wired for a security system, but I want you to have a brilliant security system that is completely wireless and doesn't tie you down to a contract. And that security system is simply safe. It's ridiculously smart. It has sensors that protect every point, access point of your home. If somebody tries to break in, break a window, open a door, whatever, the siren goes off. It'll let that person know the police already been called and on their way. It also, some of their systems have cameras, so it will take a picture. You just hand it to the police. That's the guy. Simply Safe, 24/7 monitoring, $14.99 a month, and you're never locked into a contract, and you own the system. With Simply Safe, you even get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so try it today. Simply Safe. This is the security system that you should have for your home. SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com. Go there now.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Stu and I were just talking during the break that we were watching a commercial on the Blaze for iTarget. What is it? iTargetPro.com. And he said, "What is that? What is that?" It is the great. If you are a shooter, it's the greatest thing to practice target practice ever. You put a little device. It's like a round. You put it in the chamber of your handgun. And then there's a little paper target. You set your iPad or your phone kind of in front of it. And you sit across the room or however, and you just dry fire all day at the target. And it, your phone gives you a digital, target practice. And it's really accurate. It's amazing. You're supposed to dry fire all the time, and it'll save you a lot of money. But you never do it because it's not the same as going to target practice.
Right.
This is. It's really great.
It's really cool that they can do that.
Yeah,
the technology is amazing.
iTargetPro.com. Yeah. Use the promo code Blaze and you get some discount. It's not a commercial. I'm just telling you about it now.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the government shutdown and... You know, I think it's worse than you think it is. And I don't mean the shutdown. The shutdown's a piece of cake. Oh, no, they're going to shut down non-essential services. Good. The Democrats could, first of all, there is nothing in this bill they disagree with. Right or wrong, Stu?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a continuing resolution.
Yep,
they 100% agree with this bill.
Yep.
They just want more things.
Yes. What they want is DACA. and they want to use this as leverage. Now, here's, you would think, oh, well, okay, they're going to shut down the government. Using their words, you're going to shut down the government, you're going to starve people, people aren't going to get their welfare checks, all this stuff that are lies. Oh my gosh, how many people are going to starve, and people with cancer are going to die by tomorrow morning, and all this garbage that they always say. Well, it has nothing, DACA has nothing to do with the budget. They're only using it as leverage. But what's worse, is they're going to get DACA. There's without a shadow of doubt in my mind.
The president has made a big priority. So is many in the Congress.
It is going to happen. All they have to do is give the president the money that he wants on security for the border. Mm-hmm. And we're not even talking about a whole wall anymore.
No,
we're not even talking about that. I mean, that's not going to happen. That's not what he's negotiating for. He just wants some additional security on the border and some wall in some places.
Mm-hmm.
They're using DACA, and they are using people, the so-called dreamers that they care about. They are stirring them up to think that you might be out. My gosh, you might be killed. You might be rounded up. They might be at your door in the middle of the night. Why? Not for DACA, because that one's already in the bag. They're doing it for the next election. They're doing it because it's going to make them look tough and make the Republicans look like meanies. DACA's going to happen. The president already said it would. Why are they doing it? Just for power.
Yeah, and they keep saying, like, we have to get this done. We cannot leave these families, waiting for these decisions that they could leave at any moment. Let's be honest about what the DACA thing. Number one, the president said it's a priority of his. The thing that they're asking for is something the president said himself that he wants numerous times.
Isn't that weird?
Number two, there is no deadline that happens this week with DACA. There's no reason to be talking about DACA this week. DACA, the deadline on DACA is March, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What month is it? Is it March?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not March. It's a couple
it's
of months
June,
away.
Right?
No, it's a couple
of
months
away.
It's
one of those J months.
Right. Secondly, the March deadline is a fake deadline. The president of the United States randomly just came out and said, you know what? You got till March to fix this. That's the only thing that's a deadline. Other than that, he can just say, you know what? I said March, but we're getting close, okay. So let's go to May.
So now here in a real world, let's just pretend that we're all reasonable people. Okay, I know this is not going to happen.
It's
and
not true. Not accurate.
Right. But let's just say we're all reasonable people. Here's what the Democrats should be saying today. Hey, constituents, really good news. The president is not the monster that we said he was. I mean, we still have issues with him, et cetera, but he's endorsed DACA too. So he said it's a priority. It's going to happen. There's no doors that are going to be broken down. That's going to happen. Let's just play it cool. Yes, on the budget thing. But on DACA, just play it cool because we're going to have to negotiate with the border and that might get dicey, but the DACA thing's going to happen one way or another. That's what reasonable people say. That is what they're saying in behind closed doors to each other.
And if they cared about the anxiety of these families, it's what they'd be saying publicly. They would say to them, look, we have a couple of months. Nothing's going to happen. The president has promised he's not going after DACA families. DACA will be in effect until March. Many of the people who are on DACA now will be able to continue with
it
anyway.
They're needlessly scaring these families
and trying to intimidate them to get out to the streets and start rioting. And it's a political justification to justify their position in this battle.
And it's not. And by the way, it's not even to justify their position today. This is nothing more than a lead up to 2018.
Yes,
that's
it's all election.
This is.
It's all election prep.
Yep.
And it's
being used.
It's despicable.
And it's despicable because they're using, again, the most vulnerable in our society.
Well, not the most vulnerable. The next. Well, let me give you another group of people that's even more vulnerable, which would be children who need health care.
Yeah.
Because they're doing the same thing to parents whose kids are on CHIP, the Children's Health Care Program.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, hey, the CHIP thing's going away. We don't want a temporary fix for CHIP. In the temporary fix for the budget is a six-year
extension for the Children's Health Program. 6 years, and they're going out and telling their people, this is partially aided by a Trump tweet yesterday, I will admit, but they're telling, the Democrats are telling their people that they're not getting a permanent fix on that either. They're getting a 6-year fix, which is about as permanent as you get in Washington. It's about as permanent as the tax thing that they just complained about so dramatically. It's just lie on top of lie on top of lie on top of lie to try to get this negotiation done to make themselves, as you point out, Glenn, completely correctly, specifically designed only to make themselves look tough and get donations for the next election. It's got nothing to do with any of the topics they're discussing. It's despicable. If you cared about this, you would extend it for a few weeks, avoid the shutdown, and continue the negotiation. They obviously don't want that. And you know what? They have the right to use that leverage to try to get DACA done. If the president folds to it, he folds to it. I don't think he's going to, because this is so blatantly, pure and simple, a Democrat shutdown, period. There is no argument that this has anything to do with the Republicans. No argument.
And that's why it's really amazing. They're so transparent, and yet everyone is so blind. You care about minimum wage? Okay. Instead of saying $15 an hour, let's fix the minimum wage to the cost of living. Then I never have to have another vote about it again. It just automatically goes up. Mm-hmm. If you cared, cost of living, but they don't. They want that out there so they can constantly grind against it. That's what's happening right now. And, you know, last week, Stu, I almost did something crazy. I almost went, asked to go on one of the big shows, Meet the Press or something, and paraphrase myself seriously from what I said about President Obama, about Donald Trump.
Okay. Well, that would have gone over.
I know. And I almost did it. I mean, I started to say, you know what I should do? And then if you remember listening last week, I stopped myself because I said, I might do that. So I seriously considered it, of going on and saying almost exactly the same thing I said about Barack Obama about race. And the media would have eaten it up. Mm-hmm. They would have loved me. And then on Monday, I would come back and say, here's the video of me saying this, what I was doing prior to that broadcast. Notice the media had a real problem when I did it about their guy, but they love it right now. Mm. The hypocrisy right now is just overwhelming, like I have never seen before, because the average American, because of technology, has ability to A, B, and compare now. But I'm not sure that they are. For instance, how dare you question the president's mental health? Let's take a listen here to the media on questioning someone's mental health.
Jacob, you mentioned conspiracy theories in the last segment. Let's talk about one of those. All the claims about Hillary Clinton's health, the tiptoeing is over. The whispers are turning into shouts. President Trump's fitness for office is now the top story in the country.
That is basically a dog whistle to all of those supporters out there who have been questioning Hillary Clinton's health.
Is there anything you're keeping from us for privacy reasons?
That sounded like a wink to supporters who have raised bogus questions about Clinton's health.
For Rudy Giuliani to say, Google Hillary Clinton and health, that's not outlandish.
Does it seem likely in any way that members of the GOP will take this seriously, will want to take a look at the president's mental fitness? Trump also questioning Clinton's health, which appears to have zero basis.
We looked up Hillary Clinton illness, and we found multiple articles debunking these wild-eyed lunatic conspiracy theories.
That I thought if you ran into Donald Trump at a backyard barbecue, you would find his adult children and ask what they were doing to treat him for memory care. I think that's the case.
Who was diagnosing Hillary Clinton on the basis of a piece of videotape.
Okay, he both has these issues of mental fitness, and then has these questions of intellectual capacity.
If you don't have a medical degree, shut up.
So a urologist went on Hannity's show to pass judgment on Hillary Clinton's mental state of mind.
That Donald Trump was in the early stages of dementia.
And he's passing judgment on her mental well-being.
Do you think Donald Trump as well?
But my question is, why are so many Trump surrogates fueling these rumors about Hillary Clinton's health?
I think that, Pete, it's okay to question the fitness of the sitting president of the United States.
It's really a cue to his voters, to supporters, to think, oh, maybe she does have that secret illness that I've heard about on talk radio. We would say these are the messages from a person who is not well, from a leader who is not fit for office. But many Americans are worried, and journalists need to cover that.
Just like they need to ask, is the president racist? Is there something in his background that makes him really uncomfortable or have some sort of a hatred of people who are different than him?
And all of these hypocrisy points go to the same thing. They believed that Donald Trump is racist and Barack Obama wasn't. They believe that Donald Trump is sick and that Hillary Clinton wasn't. You know, that they believe that the shutdown in 2013 was bad and the shutdown in 2018 would be good because they believe DACA is good and they believe Obamacare, that they were on the other side of that one.
It's the
same thing.
That makes the media a nanny, not a reporter. Ton of work to do on your goals in 2018, but you can get an easy box checked if just getting a good night's sleep is one of your goals for 2018. Casper Mattress has a unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and comfort so you feel perfectly balanced. And thanks to the breathable material, you're guaranteed to sleep cool. Plus, the mattresses are built to last for years. I have gotten my my Casper. In fact, I have the new Wave mattress and best sleep I've had in a long, long time. Sleep through every night. Casper. Try it yourself. 100 nights, risk-free in your home. Don't take my word for it. There's no need to. Instead of going to a mattress store and, you know, fully clothed, not in your pajamas, laying down in it like a weirdo for, you know, 10, 15 minutes and going, yep, that's the one. Try it. If you don't like it, they come and pick it up. They'll send it to you in this tiny little box, but you don't have to get it back into the box. If you don't like it, they refund everything and they come and pick it up. Start 2018 out the way you should start it out, with a guaranteed great night's sleep every night. Get a Casper. Try yours 100 nights free with free shipping, free returns. Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. Promo code Beck. $50 off the purchase of your select mattress. Casper.com. Promo code Beck. Save $50. Select mattresses right now. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So we have to reach out to Scott Perry. Scott Perry is from Pennsylvania, and he says he's been made aware of credible information regarding potential terrorist infiltration through our southern border, and that is what is really going on with the Las Vegas massacre. I want you to hear this clip. GOP behind ISIS.
Congressman, you're the only member of Congress I'm aware of who's taken a public position asking questions about this. What are your questions?
Well, I smell a rat like a lot of Americans do. Nothing's adding up. It's been 4 months, as you said. The man's dead. They said he's a lone gunman, lone shooter, yet we can't get the autopsy results. But even more troubling than that, recently I've been made aware of what I believe to be credible evidence or credible information regarding potential terrorist infiltration through the southern border regarding this incident.
Terrorist?
Yes, sir.
Connections?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so what's the outline of that? What would that...
Well, they could be, let's face it, ISIS twice before the attack. ISIS warned the United States that they would attack Las Vegas, I think, in June and August. And then after the attack, claimed responsibility four times. Meanwhile, the local law enforcement investigative services are telling us there is no terrorist connection, lone gunman. Something's not adding.
I happen to agree. I don't know about, you know, his information, but something's not right. Something is just definitely not right on this. The most well covered with video surveillance, the most well covered area probably on earth is Vegas and the casinos. We haven't seen any video. We haven't seen anything. We don't have an autopsy. We don't have a reason. We have nothing. It's been 4 months. This is the biggest shooting in American history. Something's not right. Something's not right.
Yeah, it's really strange. An attorney, because they're talking about, you know, exactly what was going on. This is from earlier this week. An effort on part of several news organizations to unseal warrants related to the Las Vegas mass shooting investigation faced a setback, but one that appears to reveal a critical component of the investigation that had been previously kept from the public. The hearing was a result of a joint lawsuit filed by seven media outlets. In a series of tweets, NBC News TV reporter Craig Feigener said that the police requested an in-camera or private hearing from the judge to explain why police department is requesting ongoing secrecy in the investigation. It's been over 100 days since they've had a press conference in relation to the shooting massacre. Though specifics remain unclear, an attorney reportedly said in court that police are investigating additional charges somehow related to the shooting. Now, again, obviously the guy's dead, so he's not going to be charged with anything additional.
Littering. Vandalism.
All he littered on the way to the casino. That is uncovered.
Well, he left those shells everywhere.
Right. Yeah, well, unfortunately true. There could be that it's the you know, wife, the girlfriend could have something, someone, right, another accomplice, or maybe there is something that's potentially terrible.
Something's not right. We don't know the story yet. We'll dig into this Monday.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.